Hello and welcome to Reality TV. It's me, Jody, as always. If you were a little confused with the new cover art, yes, it is still me. I want to send an extra special thank you out to Anne Goodrich. She designed my previous cover art, and I still love it. It has a special place in my heart. I just decided I needed to switch things up, freshen things up. It's the new year, got a new theme song, so I'm going with it. But thank you, Anne. If you're looking for an extraordinary graphic designer, go and hook up with her, Anne Goodrich. She's in our Facebook group, Anne with an E. Okay, so on today's show, I'm going to be talking about 60 Days In, Love After Lockup, and 90 Day Fiancé. Sister Wives and Married at First Sight are going to be over on Patreon this week, and I'm always going to be mixing that up so that way you always get at least one or two shows that you're watching. It's the best I can do. Bear with me. There's just so many shows that we need to cover. So if you're looking for Sister Wives, Married at First Sight, that's going to be on patreon.com/realityvpod this week. Also, in regards to Patreon, very quick and sincere thank yous to Farai, or is it Farai? I try to Google how to pronounce your name. Please correct me if I'm wrong. I also want to thank Susan, Sherry, Megan, Jamie, Jessica, and Brittany, or maybe Britta. I'm not sure if you go by Britta or Brittany. I went to college with a Britta, not the pitcher filter kind. But if I got your name wrong, I apologize. Thank you to all of you on Patreon. You truly are keeping this show afloat, and you're keeping it free here on iTunes so everyone can enjoy. So thank you very much. All right, I am going to jump right into 60 Days In because this last show was a big one. I'm going to say it over and over again. If you aren't watching the show, you're missing out. This is an extraordinary season. First up, let's talk about Matt. He is the Marine and super fan. At the end of the last episode, Matt was tapping out. He was giving the distress signal, the hand over the chest, and they pull him out and he says, this jail in the whatever, 1 or 2, 3 days he was in, it broke him to his core. He knows he's going to regret it, but he is absolutely done. He wants to get the fuck out of there, and I do not blame him. So when they get released, they tell them where they need to go to get picked up because they have to keep these inmates undercover. So he walks the 2 blocks away. He gets into the minivan of shame and he tells production that this jail that they're in what, Etowah County, Oklahoma, Arkansas, hell, wherever, it is way worse than he ever expected. And had he known it was going to be that bad, he never would have done it. So our count right now are 2 that have tapped out, Matt and Teapot. And if you didn't catch the previous recaps that I had, well, I think I had 60 Days In over on Patreon. Teapot is Jacob. I call him Teapot because he's short and stout and they just, you know, dumped him right out of the holding tank. All right, next up, let's talk about Dennis. Dennis is our tall drink of very handsome water, but he's way younger than I am. So that sounds really creepy. But Dennis is this former ball player, football player, and he needs a shower at this point. So what's a man who's dirty and smelly to do? You know, just walk shirtless with your washboard abs across the pod. Yeah, not going to draw creepy eyes from inmates or older women like myself who are going to be watching every move you make. But here's the thing with Dennis. He doesn't have any money on his commissary. He hasn't had a chance to reload it because he came on the wrong day or something. So every time he wants to take a shower, he's got to go to the guard's desk and the guard will give them a little ration of soap and shampoo. Well, by the time he and his pectorals get over to the desk, the guard is not there. Well, Dennis does not want to just wait around for this guard, so he decides it would be a fantastic idea to go behind the guard's desk and grab his soap, his shampoo, and then some sort of paper that he needed. I was immediately, like, butt cheeks clenched because, well, that was probably a really bad analogy to make considering we're talking about prison, but I was just fully engaged in a full cringe sweat because that's just something you don't do. Even in middle school, high school, you just don't go behind a teacher's desk. That crosses a line. You just don't do it. But this brings up a whole other issue, but I think it's important to talk about it because this goes into how or how maybe not Dennis is going to acclimate to this prison culture. Dennis was a star football player in high school and in college, so I am sure he is used to getting away with a lot of shit, being able to talk his way out of things, probably like a PE teacher's favorite, you know, like the PE teacher who's a basketball or football coach and they let their athletes get away with everything. I just feel like Dennis would fit into that. And, you know, if you watch the Aaron Hernandez documentary on Netflix, which we really can discuss, and listen to the podcast Gladiator, it's all about the Aaron Hernandez case. He kind of fell in that same thing. Now, I'm not saying Dennis is a murderer or anything like Aaron Hernandez, but it's that athlete culture, right? They can get away with a lot of stuff. So here's Dennis behind the guard's desk taking stuff. And the guard, who should have been in there, by the way, there's just hundreds of inmates milling about. This one dopey looking guy walks in there and he's like, "You better get the hell away from that desk." And it looks like Dennis is going to knock him out. And this guard, he wouldn't survive a sneeze from Dennis's direction. But maybe that's why we need guards that are a little clueless, because no one in a sane mind would ever go up against a guy that's stacked like Dennis. So it settles down. The guard tells him not to do it. I mean, what's he going to do at that point? He's not going to fight him. So Dennis goes and takes his shower. Now, what I found interesting, before they zoomed away to the next clip, the guard who just stood down Dennis and this other guard are talking about it. And this other guard is just like popping Pringles, like nothing. That is a type of hunger I have never had before. And I mean, I've talked about my hunger issues, my eating issues. I can eat through... probably if there is a tornado ripping through my backyard, if I was halfway through some nachos, I'm going to finish it. I'm not going to let it go to waste, you know, up in the funnel cloud, please. But to be eating Pringles in the middle of a pod that you know smells like shit, piss, BO, like that dirty hair smell, it has got to be just a stench that you will never forget. Probably truly the stench of death. But this guy's just popping them left and right. He's doing like the little lip thing, the little duck lips with the two Pringles at a time. Wow. All right. Let's go to Alex. Oh my God. Speaking of shit, wait till you hear about this shower situation. So Alex is a younger guy. I think he's just out of college. He's kind of goofy looking. But with the scruffy beard, Dave and I had a debate about this. I can see Alex passing as a legitimate inmate because with that scruffy beard he's got going on, and he was a little disheveled looking, his hair was kind of messy, I think he could easily pass as a guy you would pass on the street that looks a little methy. Maybe he's drinking out of a paper bag. He's got some baggy jeans with like those patches of the little cartoon character with the baggy jeans. I have no idea who or what I'm talking about, but I know I've seen this somewhere. So I think he could pass as that. Dave seems to think that he looks too little boyish, which I see, but with the really bad beard that he can't grow, I think he could easily pass as someone who does meth with, let's say, Tracy from 90 Day Fiancé. Now, Alex also thinks that he has a type of grit deep inside him that he can get along with anyone in any situation. And he might just have enough delusion, or maybe it's just lack of attention to his social situation or lack of attention to detail, that I think he might do fine. I think he might be one of the three that stick it out. You know, maybe he's learned to tune out his feelings because of surviving various life challenges. I don't know, but I think that he will be able to get himself in a zone and he'll be fine. Now, during intake, he gets his little gentle pat down and then they just leave him by himself to change into his clothes, which is also an issue that the women say. The women say when they go in, they get barely pat down. They could be shoving things in their butts or in their crotch area under their boobs. That would be me. I could definitely store probably a like baby mattress under both my boobs easily. So he goes in, and then when the guard walks him into his cell, I couldn't believe my eyes. The guard has a pen in his mouth. Like he's walking around like he's, you know, very cool. Like he's the cool kid in high school that just walks around with a pen in his mouth because he can. That is such a dangerous thing. All someone needs to do is just walk up to him and just bam, pop him in the mouth, and he's stabbed in the throat. And this right here would have been where I would have sent the distress signal. That is, if I made it past intake where they didn't give me the bra, I would have tapped out right there and I would have said, "I completed my mission. Sheriff, I just saved all of your guards' lives. This is the mission that I was sent here for. They're not supposed to have pens in their mouths. You're welcome. Now pay me my 60 days in fee. But no, Alex looks past that, as do all the other inmates. I mean, I'm not promoting them attacking the guard, but if that guard did something to him, like Officer Williams, who we're going to be talking about, just saying a little bam to the mouth, there's your Taekwondo lesson for the day. What the hell am I talking about? Okay, Alex. Oh my God. Shower time with Alex. Now, this shower in the men's pod is like a stage. It is front and center, right next to the guards thing, which is just another reason why the guy shouldn't be eating Pringles. Like, maybe he is sitting down for a little show that he's watching the guy showering and he's having a little popcorn, little snack. But this shower is open to everything. And there's one guy that comes screaming out of the shower, "There's a full shit in the shower." And he's saying it's not a turd, a full shit. What kind of man takes a shit in the shower? Now, Alex is like, oh shit himself, because he hasn't taken a shower in like 3 days because he doesn't want to, you know, go on stage and strip down in front of all of the pod. I wouldn't either, because I have a feeling if I were a guy, there would be something wrong with my wiener, or I would be self-conscious of it. You know, just like I'm self-conscious now, but there's nothing wrong with me or my non-existent wiener. I'm just saying that would be my self-conscious thing if I were a guy. So Alex is like, shit, what am I going to do? I got to take a shower. So he sits around. You could tell he like keeps looking over at the shower. Am I going to do it? Okay, psych myself up. And then he gives the distress signal. So production whisks him out of there, sits him down. They're like, what's going on, man? You doing okay? And he's like, yeah, why? And they're like, you tapped out. You were grabbing your heart. And he's like, whoopsie daisy. Didn't even realize that. Sometimes I have a little itch there. Don't even realize I do it. Which is where I was hoping production would say, well, let's come up with a different sign then, because what if he goes scratch him right there and it's like the boy who cried wolf and they don't come rescue him and now he's got a pen stabbed in his throat. So they send Alex back in and then he's like, all right, I'm going to go take a shower. And he gets in there and he does it. He's feeling really good. He's got a little oxytocin going. His confidence is up. So he decides that he's going to try to make friends. And it was so sad and so awkward. He kept going up to people and saying, hi, I'm Alex. And they would totally ignore him. It was rough. Then he sat down, he was watching TV, and this big guy comes over and he sits down, basically sitting on Alex as if they're playing musical chairs. But Alex is that asshole that just will not give up the seat. So Alex sits there, the guy squeezes in, and it's two grown men on one half circle little dugout chair plastic situation. I know that was a really amazing description, but you just had to see it. He didn't even get the clue to move. So what seemed like, I don't know, 20, 30 minutes later, Alex decides that he's going to casually remove himself without admitting defeat, and he's going to go play some basketball by himself. So he walks into the little basketball gym, and then we see two guys rush in, like full-on sprint, and it looks like the guys are just going to beat the shit out of him. And then, of course, the screen goes black, and we'll see what happens next week. I really hope it's just that there are two guys that want to be his friend, and they want to play basketball with him, and not that they're going to beat the shit out of him. Cross your fingers. Okay, let's go over to the ladies' pod, where I am very concerned with Shanice. Shanice is our mentor, leader, teacher. She has celiac disease, so she's got to have a complete gluten-free diet. She assumed going into this that there would be fruits and vegetables served to the inmates every day, so she would at least have something to eat that wasn't all carbs. But here we are, day three, and there has been nothing for her to eat. She has not eaten for 3 days. All right, so Dave and I are watching this, and we start talking about this because isn't this something that they should have brought up to her? Dave thinks that they should have, that they should have had some sort of alternate diet, or they should have alerted the jail or something. I am more of a 60 days in traditionalist. I'm a realist. I want it raw. And I don't think that they should have, because this is a real thing that probably has happened or something similar, right? Whether it's an allergy to what, milk, eggs, strawberries, I don't know, whatever, an allergy or an illness, this is an actual thing. So what would they do in this real situation? and she did sign some sort of a release. Not that I want her sick, but this is the type of thing that does need to be brought up in this sort of anonymous journey situation. So finally, after these days of starving, she's miserable, she's crying, she gives the signal. They call her in there and she just starts breaking down. They ask her what she wants to do. And of course, they leave us hanging. But what I was screaming was give her something to eat. They knew that she had not eaten for 3 days. Immediately when she would have walked in the door, maybe it's the mother in me, I would have had a Gatorade. I don't know, can she have Gatorade? Whatever. I would have had all the foods that she's able to eat immediately sitting there for her to eat so that she could bring her gluten level down or however that works. Oh, Shanice, I really feel terribly for her because how can she even think straight or complete the program when she doesn't even have calories in her for her brain to work? Okay, Jennifer. Jennifer's our newest inmate. She is a born-again Christian, so you know this is going to be good. And at intake, she gets a 4XL size t-shirt. She was very offended. I have to say, I wouldn't complain about that. I love a big, baggy shirt. And if you're worried about the bra situation, you're in luck because you have lots of extra fabric to fashion yourself a little halter. However, it is not just the 4XL shirt that has got Jennifer's goat. She received bedding with blood all over it. So this is our second situation where we have seen blood. Ashley has blood on her sheets in the pod, and now Jennifer is seeing it on hers. So without any sort of fear or shame or worry, she goes up to the window and just requests new sheets. Now, maybe it was because it was a newbie on their first or second day of the job. The guy goes and gets fresh linens straight out of the dryer, nice and warm, smells like a little teddy bear, and she's got clean sheets. But I don't know if I would have had the guts to ask for that. And even the other women in the holding area were shocked that she even got it because you just don't do that. You don't go and ask for clean sheets, but if it's bloody, that's a health concern. That is diseases getting spread, right? Well, Jennifer makes her way into the pod finally, and you know this is my favorite part. Fresh meat! Oh, they're banging on the door, screaming fresh meat. Someone screams out, I swear to God, I'm gonna eat your asshole! I mean, maybe the food really is that bad. They are that hungry. Who knows? Maybe that was Shanice saying that she needed some asshole to eat because she's freaking starving in there. But what Officer Williams said under her breath, I don't know what it means. Maybe this is naive Jody who doesn't know any of this shit. She says in response to that, I swear to God, I'm going to eat your asshole. She said, somebody's going to need a boat. What does that mean? Is that a joke? Is that some sort of jail term, a boat? Someone tell me what that means because I'm dying to know because Officer Williams gets in some deep shit. Let's talk about it. Ashley, a lot of people did not like her when she first went in, but I love her. I am Ashley's stan. I'm a huge fan. She gets pulled by production because she gives the signal and she just needs to vent and get all this shit off of her chest. This guard Williams, Ashley refuses to call her officer, left her naked last week, if you remember that, and she took her clothes, sent it to the laundry. She was supposed to bring her some clothes back, but she didn't. And Ashley is very upset because it was the most humiliating, traumatic moment of her life. Think about it. She knows that there are cameras watching her in her cell at all times. So she knows that all these men and women in production are seeing this go down. But here's where I fucking love Ashley. She does not want out of the program. She wants revenge. This is my type of woman. Not just complaining about it, but you do something and you make it happen. So the next day, she starts talking with other women in the pod and who have all had similar experiences with Williams and, of course, other guards. But with this fire under her ass, Ashley drafts this complaint letter with military precision. She's talking about, you know, I had 1,800 hours. Officer Williams left my genitals exposed. I mean, it's beautiful. All the other women are super impressed with her and they're all wanting her to write their complaints. I was a little surprised she didn't use that to her advantage because she could be like, hey, trade me a honey bun and I'll write up your letter. That would be a great entrepreneurial effort right there. Get that business going. Get some money, honey. But one thing at a time. Ashley's got a lot on her plate. So later, because she wrote this complaint, a supervisor comes down, and this guy was super nice. Ashley starts saying that she's very concerned about the lack of period supplies and underwear, and it's a health hazard. You know, you're free bleeding all over the place. And the supervisor is shocked. You say no more. I'll get on it. Not to toot my own 60 days in horn, but I pretty much predicted this last week, that this is just one of those things that when you have men running jails and prisons, they're not thinking about what women need for their periods. They think that we just snap our fingers and fashion our own tampons and pads out of oxygen and cotton swabs. I don't know. They're just idiots with that. But Ashley is not done. As the guy's getting up to leave, she's like, oh, by the way, what's going to happen to Officer Williams, the officer that I complained about? And this guy rolls his eyes, sits down, takes a deep breath, and he goes in. I was shocked. I don't think it's necessarily the most professional thing for a supervisor or boss to talk badly about their subordinates. But in this situation, I think we can all agree that he handled it the right way because he was absolutely pissed with Ashley. He said this isn't the first time that he's heard complaints about Williams like this. And then he said this quote, and I want you guys to tell me what you think this means because it could go a couple different ways. This is another point where I paused it and Dave and I had this debate. So he says, when it's the same thing coming from people I know full damn well running different social circles, kind of raises the hairs on the back of my neck. You know what I mean? Not totally. I don't totally know what he means. Is he saying that it's like white women complaining about Williams, so Williams is treating white women that way? Is that what he means by social circles? Or does he mean social circles as in people who are in the law enforcement community? Because as far as the inmates and these supervisors, everyone besides the sheriff running this 60 days in, they think that she's National Guard. Let me know what you guys think. I would love to get your thoughts on this. So cut to later, someone comes to talk to Williams in front of the entire pod. This must be the captain, you know, two or three levels up, you know, the guy. Now, Williams immediately becomes defensive and starts yelling back at the inmates, shut up, again, in front of her boss. So she's got no shame. And this guy looked kind of dopey. He could have been way more firm. He seemed to be a little afraid of her. But I'm going to give him credit because somehow he is like a wordsmith and gets Williams to say she's going to quit. Right there, he probably got himself a promotion because if he were to have fired her, you know, they'd be paying her severance and all that kind of bullshit. But if she quits, it's like, okay, bye-bye. So good job, Mr. Captain Man. He gets Williams to quit. But as she's leaving, she takes her key, turns this thing on a control panel, and all the lights in all of the rooms and the cells light up to wake up all the women. It was like her last fuck you to all of them. But I don't think the women minded that much because they forced her ass to quit and they're all like cheering. I freaking loved it. That is some karma. And I would love to know what Williams is doing now. I mean, that's going to be a rough step back into the job market if you're having this nationally, maybe internationally televised program following you in your LinkedIn resume. All right, I'm going to take a very quick break, a word from my sponsor this week, and then we're going to get right into Love After Lockup and 90 Day Fiancé. I remember New Year's Eve 2007 vividly. I desperately wanted to get pregnant in 2008, and what I needed at the time and didn't know about was modern fertility. You know, I had all the fertility planning books, the basal thermometer, the whole thing. But what I remember the most about that time was that it was all wait and see. You know, are my luteal phases normal? Maybe my egg supply is low. What are my chances of getting pregnant next month? Fast forward a few years, and I was crossing my fingers and praying the other way that I would not get pregnant again. again. Common denominator in all of this, like all of us women on the planet, I had no idea what was going on with my fertility without going to an OBGYN or specialist. This is why I love Modern Fertility and why I am now able to easily track my fertility and hormones. Without having to get my insurance card and benefits out to see what my plan covers, I can get all the information I need. You know, who wants to go see what they've spent on their deductible? All that stuff sucks when you're a grown up. Now, don't think Modern Fertility is just for middle-aged, fabulous women like myself. Whether you are trying to prevent pregnancy or wanting to see if menopause is on the horizon, Modern Fertility was created for all of us. I just did the simple and painless finger prick at home, mailed it in the prepaid package, and 10 days later, I had all of my results in my inbox. These tests can cost you well over $1,000, but Modern Fertility is only $159, and you can use your HSA or FSA. Plus, I'm going to tell you how to save $20 off your fertility test at modernfertility.com. I want to be in charge of my body and my health, and I want you to be empowered too. Right now, Modern Fertility is offering my listeners $20 off the test when you go to modernfertility.com/realitv. That's R-E-A-L-I-T-V. That means your test will only cost $139 instead of the hundreds or thousands it could cost at a doctor's office. Get $20 off your fertility test when you go to modernfertility.com/realitv. modernfertility.com/realitv. All right, love after lockup. We are back and we are revisiting a couple couples that we have not seen in quite some time. It was very jarring, very alarming to see that ginormous gap between Cheryl's legs. I mean, an elephant can fit through there, and I'm totally jealous. Actually, before I jump into that, I got my latest People magazine, of course, Harry and Meghan. I could talk about that all day, but Julianne Hough and her husband, Brooks something or other, what the hell is going on with that? Do we like her or do we not? I don't really like her. And no, I'm not related. I get that question all the time, like as if people think I am her, I don't know, very chubby older mom, older sister. No, we are not related. I'm about the furthest thing from Mormon or Church of Jesus Christ Latter-day Saints. I forgot what they call themselves anymore. But anyway, we need to talk about what's going on with that. She drives me nuts. I think she's super phony. Something's up with that marriage, though. But let's talk about our marriages and engagements and dating stories here on Love After Lockup. So we are only on week 3, you guys. For some reason, I feel like this season of Life After Lockup has already been 6 or 8 episodes. We're only on episode 3. Let's start out with Michael, Meghan, and Sarah. What a fucking shit show, non-exciting storyline. We need them off the show. I would have much rather seen more Tony and Angela, even though I think their scenes are a little staged. Get rid of this thruple. But let's talk about it. Sarah and her rum raisin from 1993 lipstick that I wanted to just get some Vaseline on a cotton swab and wipe that shit right off of her lips. They're going to go exercise their legal right and get custody of her kids or something. Don't really care. All I think she needs to do is stop paying for the phone and Michael will never, ever come around. You won't even have to worry about him anymore. If he's not keeping in touch with your kids when you're making it easy for him, he never will. Michael is the type of lazy man that will never care about anyone but himself. I mean, I'm happy that Sarah is doing what she needs to do, and I get she's got to do it legally just in case. But still, I would love to see her actually use that money for her own kids because Michael certainly doesn't want to be taking care of 2 kids all day long. He can't even bother to freaking call them, which is why it made me so freaking thrilled to see his sorry ass sick in bed. If I were Meghan, I would have been leaning over him, coughing directly into his mouth, eyes, ears, any sort of open orifice. Well, maybe not any, but close to it. That's what you deserve, you asshole. If karma's not going to come around in a legal sense, it's going to come around in a massive flu virus. The only thing that really would have made that better would be, I don't know if there were like some bed bugs in that hotel, just suck that little skinny Slim Jim dry. But Meghan is not any better. I'm not saying that she was the good one in this situation because She's stupid. I really want to give her credit because she physically looks like she's pulled herself together, but she's a fucking mess. You gotta learn how to be sneakier if you're gonna be trying to steal someone's phone. First of all, any of you listening who have a male partner, you all know this. You wait until you hear the man snoring, scratching his balls, rolling over, drooling, scratching his head, something, before you go grabbing his phone and tap, tap, tapping on it with your nasty long-ass fingernails. He's gonna hear that shit, especially if the guy's a cheater and he hides his real life in his phone. Trust me, it's like a mom with a newborn baby. You hear a breath in the wrong direction and you are up and at him. But Michael, oh, he definitely knew how to pay Megan back for that. Maybe he's just that good. Like, he knows that she was gonna do that, so he planned this ahead of time. He's got a very well-kept secret under that ponytail of his, because he planned for his friend Rock to show up. Now, if you remember, his friend Rock was the friend who Megan kissed. She said she didn't sleep with him. There was nothing more. Remember, Megan was supposed to be a virgin when she met Mike, but I don't know if I really even believe that anymore. Well, Rock and Michael start talking, and Rock confesses that it was actually a lot more than just a kiss. And Michael starts saying, oh, so you love her, you love her. And then, bam, Mike just does this like uppercut slap move to Rock's chin, and then game over. We go to a commercial and we'll see what happens next week. This all begs the question, what's so great about Megan? I know everyone kind of liked her at the beginning of the first season that she was on, but is she really that much of a catch? I mean, she's living at home, don't think she has a job. She's just floating around on this show, tapping things with her long fingernails. I don't get it. All right, moving on to Brittany and Marcelino. I think I'm going to sum this up in about 15 seconds. Brittany wants her mom to come and help with her kids more often because she's going to have another newborn. Her mom was an alcoholic. She got burned in a house fire, but now she's over for dinner and seems like everything's okay until Brittany starts saying what a horrible childhood she had. And then Brittany makes her mom cry. End of story. Andrea and Lamar. As much as I hate Andrea, I think I could do a full spinoff of Andrea and Lamar. I mean, really, I just want to see Lamar, but if Andrea has to be in it, so be it. I could take, you know, it'd be great. Lamar and Tennyson, just the two of them, like a remake of the movie. Oh my God, what was it? Dutch, I want to say. Yes. That is a great movie. Go back and watch it. It's very, very funny and not a lot of people know it. But I could see Lamar and Tennyson doing this. A road trip. It's like a son teaching stepdad kind of comedy. It would be great. All right. Well, let's get to the sitcom with Andrea if we have to. Womp womp. Lamar is off parole and he's just landed in Utah. And Andrea brings him back to their apartment and says they are going to party. Which means get out the one bag of plain Lay's, a jar of salsa, a jar of queso, and an 8-inch round cake. I mean, they are going to parole this bitch up. That was sad. Like, if that is the type of celebration, the type of party that Andrea throws, I would never want a birthday. At least whip up some French onion dip, you know, get the onion soup mix, mix it with actual sour cream. That's the least you could do after someone's been in prison and on a flight from LAX to Utah, all right? It's called manners, being a good hostess. You come to my house any day of the week, this is actually no joke, and I will have the fixins for a French onion dip, done the right way. I'm not talking about the pre-made stuff, which is also delicious. I'm not going to turn it down, but an actual mixed together onion soup mix, not the generic. That is the one thing. Well, two things. Hidden Valley Ranch. You got to get the Hidden Valley Ranch. Oh, and Heinz ketchup. You can't get, you know, catsup. You can't do that. Certain things you got to do, name brand, and French onion dip is one of them. Let's get back to Andrea, who probably doesn't even know what French onion dip is, even the jarred stuff. She's a monster. So what are they going to do after they eat their plain chips and sad salsa? They're going to fight about where they're going to live, Utah or LA. This is one of the very few situations where I will actually agree with Andrea. she's not wrong. I mean, if she wants to raise her kids in an area that she deems safer and where she thinks her kids have more opportunities to do the things that they want to do, I mean, how can you fault her, right? Where I think this whole argument falls apart on both of them, both of their faults, is that this shouldn't be a surprise situation that comes up. They both should have talked about this before he even got out of prison or before they even started getting serious in the closet and in their relationship. Where are we going to live after this? Now, she knew he was going to have to live there when he was on parole, but this should have been brought up long before, like years and years ago. And unfortunately, Andrea thinks that she's the one who's all sad and upset and hurt, but it's your three kids who you have dragged all the way to Los Angeles, all the way back. And now what are you going to do? Go back again, back and forth? Andrea, she's a fucking mess, but you know what? I'll watch Lamar every night, every day of the week. All right, Lacey and Shane. Before I even talk about anything in this episode, I have a theory about this John, whatever the hell she calls John. What if Lacey doesn't even know what his real name is? What if Lacey has been calling him John because she's not sure if his name is actually John or Sean? You know, for example, when you meet someone, maybe they're at your kid's school or at work or an acquaintance, a neighbor, and you've been talking to them for years, but you don't really even know their first name because you didn't catch it the first time. And now it's been so long that it's awkward and you can't ask them. I'm thinking this might be what's going on with Lacey. She doesn't even know his name. So she does that ambiguous Jean Valjean thing. I mean, maybe that's why at the end of this episode, she asked the officer, wherever that she called, about John so-and-so, hoping they would say back, like, oh, you mean John Smith or Sean Smith, but they never did. Again, same thing, like if you're introducing someone, like, hey, neighbor who you don't know their name, this is my wife, Tammy. Tammy, this is, and then the neighbor doesn't say it, and you're like, fuck, it was my one chance and I lost it. Well, that's what I think might be going on here. Okay, but back to what's going on in their shit show of a life. Lacey is still worried about Jean Valjean, so she leaves Shane to polish off his natty light all by his lonesome, and she's going to go find Sean, her best friend, so she can help. You know, Lacey always wants to help John out. Remember when she gave him a quick uppercut, slapped him across the face, threatened to call his probation officer? Yeah, we know Lacey. She's such a helper, such a helping spirit. Maybe she wants to help John earn a paycheck, cast him in her next webcam series. No. I'm letting my imagination just run wild here. What Lacey actually wants to happen is that she wants to find John, not so she can stop him from doing drugs, because I truly think she could fucking care less. She wants to find him for herself because she's selfish and she's a narcissist. She wants to loop Jean back in, make him fall in love with her again, especially now that he's gone back to prison. Yeah, she calls and finds out that he got a DUI and some drugs and all this other stuff, and he's going back to prison. I actually think that turns Lacey on more than anything, because she's said it before. This is her thing. Prisoners are her thing. She loves to have a guy who's behind bars, who's going to idolize her and send her letters and all this bullshit. So this is really best case scenario for Lacey. I think it sucks that John is going back to prison. Sucks even more for the hundreds, if not thousands of people that he put at risk while he was drunk driving. I just think Lacey is poison. She poisons everyone and everything around her. And we all know what's going to happen in the end, right? She's going to be calling John secretly in prison, and then Shane's going to find out and get on his Razor scooter and scooter back home and enroll back in middle school. All right, let's meet up with Cheryl and Josh. I truly forgot all about these two, but they are back. Our two newest Mensa members are back from their sabbatical. Lucky us. We meet up with Cheryl. She's got one of her kids in the back seat of the car, and this little one appears to have a rash on his face. I don't know if you saw this. I'm sure Cheryl did, because she's a really good mommy, guys. She's smart. She's probably bringing him to the local convenient care place, get a little culture of some sort. She's going to be on the ball. She's a very good mom, you guys. I mean, it's crazy how she and Josh are wondering why both their families hate them and think that they're doing the wrong thing. I mean, it's not like they're comparing themselves to the criminals, Bonnie and Clyde, and they don't take off for months at a time ignoring her kids or having zero jobs or responsibilities. What are they thinking? Oh my God. I'm actually very depressed when I think about these two. There's just a dark, gloomy day when I think about the two of them together. Cheryl's kids having her as a mom, and then you have Josh stepping into the picture, him knowing that she's a mom and continuing a relationship with her. Like, do whatever you want, the two of you, but leave the kids out of it. Like, you got to decide whether you are going to be in their lives or not. Don't be there for 1 month and then choose prison daddy for the next 3 months and then you dash home because you didn't like the proposal that he gave you at the abandoned medieval times. That's bullshit. You are messing your kids up. Oh my God. Now, this is really the darkest part of this entire episode. The clown. How, where, who, why was there a clown giving Cheryl advice? No explanation except for Cheryl's friend in the Chiron. We need to know more information. Where did they meet? Like, does Cheryl just crash kids' birthday parties because it's probably more on her level than, let's say, a book or a magazine? Is it required now for this friend to dress up as a clown every time Cheryl comes around because she doesn't know it's an actual person behind the face? Like, he's got to be ready to twist up some balloons into giraffes at any given moment because Cheryl might stop by. You cannot just throw that kind of thing on the TV and give us no information. Not that I want to know more about clowns, because clowns and mimes, it's the same genre. There's some ulterior motives. Like, they're always thinking of something else. They may be twisting up a little hat for you to wear out of a balloon, but what they're thinking is, I want to, like, grab your boob or something. There's something very creepy about clowns, mimes. I don't trust them. Whew, speaking of people who should never, ever be trusted, let's get into Clint and Tracy. This was a level of real, true darkness that I don't think we've seen on reality TV since, I'm going to go way back, like Real World Season 2, Los Angeles, when David ripped that blanket off of Tammy and she felt like she was raped and violated. And then she went to the bathroom and slammed the door onto Beth's head. It's the same episode where she screamed, "It wasn't not funny," until they voted David out of the house. Yeah, I mean, it was that. Or, I mean, if we're going to include talk shows and murder, of course, the Jenny Jones Show murder, when they showed Tracy wearing that suicide vest. That easily is in the top five of all these, right? And by the way, that vest, let's just take a moment here, a little pause button. Tracy said it was because of an eating disorder. And I can tell you right off the bat, I have not even Googled this because I know for a fact I saw it on either Jailbirds or an episode of The First 48, also on A&E, same genre of 60 Days and I'm Obsessed. That is one of those suicide or self-harm vests. They give them that to wear because it's just Velcro. It's heavier. It's to keep them safe. It doesn't have any hooks or snaps or zippers or anything on it. So that's what it is. Maybe I'm wrong, but if I'm wrong, so is Jailbirds in The First 48. I mean, I'm sure Tracy does have an eating disorder. That's not why she has the vest. Maybe they told her that's why, because they didn't want to tell her the real reason. Or maybe she's embarrassed, or for whatever reason, she's reluctant to tell us why. But here's the thing about these two. The reason they're in jail is because they have major drug issues or alcohol issues, mental issues. And in theory, jail would probably be the best place for these two if drugs were not able to be accessed in jail, but we know that's not the case. Again, we watch The First 48, 60 Days In, Jailbirds. It's easy to get what you want when you're locked up. It's sad because there's no solution to the issues that Clint and Tracy have, their own issues and the issues they have with each other. And that's where we get into Clint's parents. It's got to be horrible for them because I'm sure they probably felt so good going to sleep at night knowing that Clint was in jail because he's not sleeping in a parking lot. He's not out missing and doing whatever drugs with Tracy. They know where he's at. But for him to get released and then start this cycle all over again, it's what every family who has an addict in their family deals with. It's really dark. And I don't know if we're really doing anything but exploiting their situation. We're getting serious here. The whole reason is to snark and laugh at these shows. I just feel like we're past that point. I don't even really like making fun of Tracy sitting there looking how she's looking because it's just sad. It's really dark and depressing. So let's move on to 90 Day Fiancé, shall we? This is going to lift our moods, lift our spirits, especially because we are not going to talk about Angela and Michael and how horrible Angela is, and also hypocritical because she hates her immigration laws, but she supports the guy who is most against immigration. I'm not going to get political. I'm just saying. All right. No Anna and Marcel, although I need to give some credit to Larissa in our Facebook group, not Larissa from 90 Day Fiancé. Larissa mentioned the fact that when Anna and Marcel speak to each other in Turkish, they just say çuka, çuka, çuka a lot. And it's not being like racist or linguist, whatever. They legitimately do say that a lot. So we've deducted, or Larissa has deducted, that that means okay or I agree. Çuka. Like when you picture Marcel speaking, he's always saying çuka, çuka, çuka. Actually reminds me of when my nieces were little. They would say çupa, çupa. I think that means like pacifier or something. Anyhow, let's get into it. Michael and Juliana. It is wedding day for the happy couple. And Michael's brother, who looks exactly like Michael. I mean, the Mary from Sister Wives jowls that runs deep in the family. Michael also has a friend with an aggressive hipster do. Like, he's really bro-ing it up right in the front. It's a flippy... what's that guy from Little Rascals? It's too much, too high. Maybe if it were like an inch or two lower, it wouldn't be so goofy looking, but it was pretty ridiculous. Now, Juliana, on the other hand, she's not having a great time with friends because she's sad about her family. What am I supposed to say here? It really was sad and depressing that her family couldn't be there. They didn't text her. They didn't call her. They weren't part of this little video montage. Very depressing. It was sweet to see Sarah as the officiant. I didn't realize that Sarah is a very divisive person on this show. I really like her. I think she appreciates and she's nice to Juliana, which is very nice for an ex to do. There's a lot of people that don't like her and think she's got ulterior motives, but I liked it. I thought it was really cool to see, I don't know, a non-traditional family, whatever the hell that means. I don't think that even exists anymore, but whatever. I mean, if your ex wants to be the officiant and it works for your family, go for it. I'm embracing every family that's different, as long as you're not one of those people that's like having sex with your car or something. That's where I draw the line. All right, moving on to Jasmine and Blake. It's a good thing I didn't say one of those people who's like having sex with a sex doll, because Jasmine would have fell in that category. It really is sad what she has done to her face, because she was so cute before. We gotta just cut the shit and be honest with ourselves, and they need to be honest with the show. Primarily, I'm talking about our sex robot, Jasmine. Obviously, she went on whatever app it was to meet someone in the area where her sister lives, and Blake just fell right into the trap. But Blake, although he's a nice guy, he's not quite the sparkling personality. Like, the most pizzazz he has is when he wears his Cosby sweater mask and he sips white wine slushies when they go out to dinner. He's just as boring and beige as Jasmine. I'm totally tired of these two, but I also kind of feel badly for Jasmine at times, because if the only time they are ever going out, it's with Blake's friends and whatever her name is, the fly girl girlfriend and the friend Emmett, that would be very annoying. Now, if they go out, just the two of them, quite often, and she just never wants to go out with the friends, that's a whole other story. Jasmine's got to be honest with herself, though, that this is what she chose, and maybe she's kind of like an Anfisa. They got suckered, and now she's got Blake, who's the George of the Paloma Wine Slushy Strip Mall restaurant. I feel like I'm sounding like I'm defending Jasmine, but I really don't like either of them, to be honest. I think they're both very boring. I think Blake has some social anxiety or some social awkwardness, so maybe he does always want to be around his friends. And if they're spending time together on their own, that's great, but do they seem like a couple that's truly in love and meant to be together? Of course not. So Jasmine ends up going home on her own because she doesn't want to go out with the friends. And I want to get into the backstory of Jasmine's sister. What is she doing here? Who is her fiance? Someone has got to fill me in. You got to fill me in like they're filling in their faces, and I need it immediately. You know, on one hand, I guess it's good that they have each other here in this foreign country, but you can't come here, and this really goes for the two of them, you can't come here and just mope around all day, have no expectation to get a job, and you want basically a stranger, Blake, to just relax with you all day and meditate and be finished with you. Wouldn't you love to know what Jasmine's resting heart rate is? I would guess somewhere around like 40, 43 maybe, and her peak heart rate when she's working out tops 85. Like nothing moves her needle. She might be tense, but she's just putters along. That's boring for anyone. You could be the most beautiful liquid filler injected face on the planet, but it's not going to be Blake. It's not going to be a millionaire that you meet that you're ever going to have a connection with, because you got nothing to offer except to sit there and go, huh, show us what you got besides biker shorts. Okay, Tanya and Sinjin, here we go. Deep breath, Jody. Don't blow a coronary artery. This bitch plans a couple's astrology reading and throws a, Sinjin's not really my soulmate in there. No, like obviously if you are wearing stupid matching rock necklaces tied with sinew and you're flitting off to Costa Rica to study daisy stems and how the tide affects your menstrual flow and Sinjin supportive of that, I would say you're pretty damn close to soulmates. I mean, for Sinjin to be sitting there and to become privy to this major truth bomb via a stranger on Skype, you know, facilitating this conversation, that's a punch to the gut. And I'm not even into this kind of shit. You could tell he wanted to cry. He was taken off guard, to say the least, when Tanya said this. And then when they're talking to producers, Tanya just kept digging herself deeper. Like she really truly thinks the more she talks, the more she's gonna dazzle whoever is listening to her, and that her horrible sense of humor is gonna make us be like, yeah, she's hilarious. Yeah, we agree with you, girl. No, she is just so used to Sinjin kissing her ass. But the honeymoon period is over. We've all been there, or most of us have been there if you've fallen in love. Everything is perfect. Your partner cannot say anything wrong. But that period of time doesn't last forever in a relationship. You start to get into your normal ebbs and flows or energy flow, whatever the hell these two would call it. And call me an asshole, but sometimes I don't think the truth is what you should say to your partner. Like, even if Tanya doesn't feel like Sinjin is her soulmate, I wouldn't admit that to him, especially if that's something that's super important to him. Maybe keep it to yourself and spin it so he isn't so heartbroken, you know? Maybe you say something like, I feel like our souls are connected in a different way. And since we're still falling in love, our souls are still finding each other. I don't know, but you don't admit it and then keep repeating it and hammering home your point and defending yourself by saying, yeah, my ex is my soulmate. My first love is my soulmate. Definitely not you. You know, you can edit yourself, Tanya. That's actually something they teach you in real school, not daisy chain school. Oh God, I feel like daisy chain means something else than what I'm thinking it means. Anyhow, this bitch. Now, Mike and another bitch, Natalie, what the fuck? Natalie not only drove a Sequimer to flee Kyiv in the middle of the night like Yovanovitch, but she crashes the fucking Uber. This is a very unique type of crazy we got on our hands here. Like, even a Nicole from Nicole and Azin wouldn't hop into an Uber to escort Azin to the airport after she beat him down. Well, in Nicole's case, not only emotionally, but physically. Natalie is fucking crazy. She slinked through that alley into the car like she does it every fucking night. Was chills up my spine. Street lamps reflecting off of her eye bulges. I can't even put words together right now. Okay. She is like a there will be blood kind of crazy. There are definitely some knives that are sharpened that she's just waiting to use. Like, this is the kind of chick who's going to stroke you and pet you and kiss you and torment you. Everyone loves you. Your mother love you. Your father love you. Whew. That's beyond crazy. That's just like the opposite of whatever a man wants to hear when his girlfriend's trying to make up with him. Is not about his mommy loving him and his daddy loving him. But here Natalie is just stirring a soon-to-be mental illness pot in Mike's head. Now, in Natalie's perfect world, let's hear it, crazy eyes, she thinks Mike would apologize for doing nothing wrong. I am squeezing the edge of my chair right now so hard it's about to break, much like Casey Anthony's dad did during the trial. That's coming into my head right now, maybe because Natalie has got some Casey Anthony in her. I'm just saying. Now, in my perfect world, Natalie would stay in the Ukraine, maybe blink once or twice, and we would never see her again. Also, in my perfect world, more Bojangles. I mean, sure, I saw those flashbacks of my childhood Bojangle-themed nightmare. We're not going to go there, but you guys, Bojangles has really kind eyes. They're a little Charles Manson-y, but I just see like a little boy face, and he's got the soul of a townie who's got a tab at the local dive, you know, like the tab that'll never get paid, but they're just like, all right, come on, Bo, get on over here and fill up a, what do you think Bo would drink? I definitely think he's like a whiskey, a cheap gin, and I don't even think a Natty Light. Definitely not a Heineken kind of guy. Maybe like a Michelob Ultra? No. Oh, you know what? I think I got it. He likes a Coors Banquet brew, like the good old days, like the stuff that will just make you shit yourself because it's so thick and heavy. Yeah, he's definitely into some Coors Banquet brew. Might just send some out to Sequim. I definitely want to know more about Bo. I got to know that backstory there. It's like I said, kind eyes, soul of a townie, and a warm heart. Now, this actually leads me to what I think Mike's true problem is. Like, if we're going to get serious here for a moment, Mike is the type of guy who takes in strays. Like, I'm the type of person that attracts strays. People just come to me and they just start talking to me, but I don't actually take them home. Mike is the kind of guy that does that. Like, he just opens himself up to people who have issues and like deep holes in their lives and their hearts that need to be fixed, and he thinks he can do it. If you just look at his history, he has the ex-wife who was in denial about being gay, who came out and is now married to a woman. He's got Uncle Bo, who's a rambling, gambling man, and now he's got a fiance with a hollow womb that she must fill and a narcissistic personality disorder who will never be filled with anyone except herself. I know that got really deep there, but women, Sequim adjacent, get your hands on Mike, some good woman. I actually think he's a good guy. He's just in the grasp of crazy eyes. Okay, Emily and Sasha from Volgograd, Russia. No shit, the two of them want to get married. They want to get married because they have nothing better to do than to make each other miserable. Emily is clearly not happy. Sasha is miserable. And the most miserable of them all is Emily's sister. Sure, she's our voice of reason, but I want to rescue her. She does not deserve to be subjected to this level of just darkness. Now, this bridal shop, I am fairly confident is the alter universe, the mirror image universe of Michaela from Unexpected. Go with me on a journey here. Remember when Michaela went to go try on prom dresses? This is the mirror image of that prom shop, down to the outdated dressing room curtain. If you watch that show, yep, you're seeing it too. Now, the dresses that Emily picked out, I know this is not Say Yes to the Dress, but I need to discuss this momentarily. The dresses that she picked out, I can only describe as the complete polar opposite of my taste in anything. I don't know what look she was going for. I hope she found it, because those were two of the most heinous dresses I've ever seen in my life. I would say Sister Emily's resting stink face is now my mood when I think about Emily and Sasha. Just the energy those two carry, even walking around a beautiful rose garden, is still very Volgograd during the darkest, gloomiest, foggy winter. All right, last but not least, Robert and Annie. This is the scene that we have been teased with since the previews for this season. Robert's bringing Annie to meet his big brother tonight. It's a big night for these two lovebirds, and it's a big night for this lucky Uber driver who Robert is going to rate 5 stars. If you are in the Winter Park, Florida area, holler at the Silver Camry girl in your Uber app. Now, we get to this bar with Robert, his brother Kenny, and his sister and Annie. I was a little concerned about the food situation because there was one small plate of very sad-looking nachos that barely got touched. I would have been diving into that. Like, is anyone going to eat that? You guys can have the last one? No? Okay, I'll eat all of them. Very concerning. Now, producers definitely got to this brother Kenny before anyone got there, because Kenny was ready to pop off on Annie immediately. So he starts asking her if she really loves Robert, and why does she always complain, and why does she always want things. And you know I am not Annie's biggest fan, but that was really shitty to gang up on her like that. You think Kenny would have read the room a little bit, like, oh, I know he wanted me to go in on her, but I'm going a little too strong. And for Robert to then team up and do that, like, yeah, you know what women do. She nags me when I'm watching the game. He was doing the yap, yap, yap thing. Come on, man. If you see that the woman that you are supposed to be loving is feeling uncomfortable and ganged up on, stop. Not the right time, not the right place. What I thought was really telling, however, was that Robert's sister didn't stick up for her as much as I thought she would. So some of that, I believe, you know, while Robert maybe is doing all he can and Annie is being a little needy, but on the other hand, these two should have gotten to know each other for more than 8 hours before they got engaged. That was kind of a downer ending, but listen, we got through 3 shows this week. Remember, on Patreon, I'm going to be talking about Sister Wives and Married at First Sight. I'll be mixing those up every week, so they'll rotate in and out on Patreon and here over on the regular podcast. If you want to check out Patreon, check the show notes, patreon.com/realitytvpod. Coming up this week on Total Request Podcast with my buddy Amanda from Amanda Loves to Hate Teen Mom, we're going to be recapping an episode of Drag Race from season 5. I'm not a huge Drag Race watcher. I love the show. I just don't have time to watch them all. But I heard the episode that we're watching is an iconic Alyssa Edwards episode. So check that out. Links in the show notes, patreon.com/AmandaAndJody. Please leave a 5-star review on iTunes. Really helps me out. And thank you so much to all of you who have left reviews. They're so sweet. I read them and you guys just make my day. Also, remember to check out our Facebook group. It is Reality TV Orchard of Snark, or you can just click the link in the show notes. Check out the link for my sponsor in the show notes as well. And until next week, stay salty.